Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We're going to have a great show today, but before I get to introducing my guest, I have to ask you, our listeners, as I always do, for your comments, your thoughts, if you'd like to communicate with us at Thoughts for the Week, and let us know if there's some topic or area you'd like us to cover. We'd certainly make every effort to do so for you. And I'd like to give you two ways of reaching us. First would be the good old letter, putting a stamp on an envelope. Address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you prefer to email us, that's easily done. So on the computer, just send us an email to clemons10@aol.com. That's C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at aol.com. While you're on the computer, I encourage you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. You could find that at spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. And while you're there, not only do I hope you find the articles and features of interest, you could also hear our radio program, Thoughts for the Week, and that you could do at your convenience. And so we encourage you to consider that. We have archive shows, too, so a number of topics you might be interested in. Well, let's get to the matter of today. We are delighted to have a return guest, and we're happy to welcome Richard Medwid. And Mr. Medwid is the Director of Behavioral Health Services for the Catholic Charities of Fairfield County. And first, Richard, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Father.
Well, I'm delighted to have you back again, and we have very much to talk about, and certainly in the area of mental health services, that's one that never ends, as does other aspects of our human existence. But, you know, I'm just wondering, given today, you know, there's so much even talk and about mental health and attitudes in the country and the divisions and all the rest of it. I'm just wondering, has anything change in regard to perhaps priority of needs in mental health?
At this point, we've seen a very growing trend in cases coming into both of our clinics. We have a clinic in Danbury, Catholic Church of Behavioral Health in Danbury, and also one in Norwalk. Within the last few years, a big increase in trauma cases of all kinds of trauma. I think in the light of the number of shootings that we've had in our country, seems to be one after another almost every other week. We haven't received any of those cases because they're not in our area, but however, trauma in general among consumers seems to be at the forefront, whether it be assaults, people getting raped, shot at, child abuse and child neglect. All of that seems to have come to the top in the last, I'd say, 3 years. And all of our staff have had to go for some very specific trauma training to keep up with that. And there's a few models that seem to be fairly effective. But certainly that. And the other topic is in the area of substance abuse and addiction among our youth. You probably have read, and some of your listeners may have been reading about the epidemic of opioid use, and that's real. It's not just in the newspaper and headline. It's all around us in all of our communities, and that is also another significant statistic that we're seeing coming into our clinics as we service adolescents and young people and adults as well. So that's also something that is of serious concern for us.
You know, of all the areas that you've noted there, there seems to be that overriding notion of either a total lack of self-worth for either the individual, how he's treating himself or she's treating himself or herself, and toward the others. You know, and I just think of always there is that great commandment, you know, love of God, love of neighbor, love of self. And everything you said, of course, is right, the antithesis of all of that. In the area of trauma, because you mentioned that as something that's coming along, and you also mentioned things that's starting to be helpful there. First, I'm wondering, does the service or the field that you are in identify any particular cultural realities that have caused this increase in any way?
I think, I'm not sure about that. I have a couple thoughts, maybe I'll get there. But one of my answers to this is that I think the public has definitely come a long ways in terms of speaking about what's been a crisis for them, what's been traumatic for them. I think the acceptance of us sharing these horrible stories with our loved ones is really come up, and I think that's probably part of why we're seeing an increase in clients coming in for services, that it's more acceptable to not just keep our traumas secret anymore and come forward and you know, talk to people and try to get the proper treatment for it. As far as the other part of the question, I'm not really sure of that answer.
We're going to...
Yeah.
If they did, there you are. You have a great book to write.
There's the next book, yeah.
Well, wait, I'm just wondering, you know, we talk about reaching out to any of the different locations for mental health help for Catholic services. Is it simply, when you contact, do you contact Catholic Charities of Fairfield County and then you are directed perhaps to your office do you have a set building?
Yes, we have separate all of our programs in Fairfield County, whether they're food programs or child care programs, we have all separate locations for those services. So it's not one building with all the services. So Catholic Church Behavioral Health is at 405 Main Street Danbury. That's our building for behavioral health services. Mm-hmm. And then in Norwalk, it's 120 East Avenue. So they're all separate. They're all separate services, but people can reach our services by going to our Catholic Charities of Fairfield County website and tap on the link for the programs, and you'll have a direct connection to any of the programs that are listed there.
It's interesting mentioning your Danbury office, having spent, before retirement, 15 years at St. Joseph's in Danbury, which is very close to that office. We can walk right over.
It's right next to the largest Dunkin' Donuts in Connecticut.
I didn't realize it was the largest one.
Yes.
Oh,
well, I made that up.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
But what I also wanted to mention, again, having been in residence there, involved as chaplain at the hospital, my involvement over the mental health area of that hospital, of course, was part of my routine. And so I'm wondering, I just want to ask, does your area service or have a lot of relationships with the hospital?
Yes, we work very closely just about every week with Danbury Hospital from the Danbury Clinic and Norwalk Hospital and Stanford Hospital for our Norwalk Clinic. Danbury Hospital offers inpatient psychiatric care and an intensive outpatient program. And oftentimes, people that we're working with in our outpatient clinic need a more serious level of care, and we help connect them to that intensive outpatient program. They go for another level of care that's needed, and then they come back to us for continuing care.
So well, one of the great frustrations I would find, I'm sure the patient would find too, is the recidivism. That there's that in for a period of time, out, back in. Is this a problem, I guess I'm going to ask with regards to the state of Connecticut and how it tries to treat or what it could do in regard to mental health? I've seen this in not only in my hospital work but in other people I've known where, in essence, the person has to either commit a crime or be found out in the street and picked up by the police, and then they go through this system, which runs a few weeks, and then back out again.
Yeah.
Is this simply it right now? Or?
Well, that's one part of our population, people that fall into those categories. But most of our population that we serve are self-referred. They're not referred by probation or a court system. Most of them are calling on their own, their families. We treat families and children, so they're calling on their own and they're requesting services for their child or for their spouse or for their family. Yeah.
So you mentioned the trauma end of it. Now, what I'm just wondering, what types of services do the people who come to you need? And these seem to be things that might be handled certainly outside of a hospital or a mental facility.
Well, our programs are outpatient, which means people come for a daily appointment or a weekly appointment like you would to a doctor's office, and they're assigned a licensed clinician, and the full assessment is completed, and then they start to enter into the therapy phase or counseling phase, which is individual group or family sessions weekly. We review their cases every 90 days. We also have a medical director on site, psychiatrist on site that completes medication assessments in case there's a need for someone with severe depression or some other disorder that requires a look at possible medication. So that pretty much is the way that we begin the case.
So how would you describe your staff as far as their...
I am blessed with this staff in both locations, in Norwalk and in Danbury. We have a great staff. They're all licensed clinicians of a variety of backgrounds. We have licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage and family therapists, and licensed professional counselors.
Hmm. Now, of course, there is the question, you're providing all of this very professional help through Catholic Charities. Well, I guess not only you, but all the services, how are they funded through Catholic Charities?
Well, the landscape has changed, Father, quite a bit. This is my 35th year in behavioral health services. Many years ago, when I was a young man, and other nonprofits, we were able to secure state and federal grants to support behavioral health services, and they are very hard to find these days. They're not available. So we really rely on insurance reimbursement. So we accept all insurance, private insurance from people that call. And we also probably are the largest provider of Medicare and Medicaid services in Fairfield County for outpatient counseling.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So now that I said that, I'm sure we're going to get more calls, which is great. And now that people know that we're the largest provider of Medicare and Medicaid.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I have already sent some people the call.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's what we're there to do. We're there to serve.
And it's good to know, really, and I know we're talking about behavioral health, but it's good to know how wide a range of services that Catholic Charities provides for people in need. It's just a terrific thing.
Yeah, we have a huge daycare program in Norwalk called Room to Grow. Senior nutrition, homeless outreach teams, food programs, immigration services.
This is phenomenal. Yeah. Now, one of those services happens to be drug management, and I want to ask a little bit about what type of assistance you provide there.
Yeah, that really speaks to our medical director in each of our behavioral health sites. They're there to, again, I had mentioned, if there is a need that comes up during the work that our clinicians have with our clients regarding their emotional stability, then we refer them to our medical director, and there's a medication assessment completed with some recommendations for a trial of medication for depression or bipolar, whatever the conditions are that we're picking up on. So that's what
they do with it. What are the situation, especially where a person does need medication in order to maintain a pretty good level and able to reengage into society? I've noticed in some cases where individuals have gone through the process of, well, I'm feeling great now, and I guess I don't need these pills anymore.
That's one of the biggest problems that we face, Father. That's a good example. We call that being compliant or non-compliant. So our treatment plans, speak to strategies every week that we're asking clients to work on when they're not in the session. So they have homework to do sometimes, or they have things that they should be trying to work on outside of their appointments. And if they're prescribed medication and they're saying, yeah, okay, I'll go on a trial medication, what can happen for some people, and this is just a human thing, They'll take it for a while, and it will actually work and help their emotional stability along with the talk therapy. And then without telling their counselor, may say, you know, I feel pretty good today. I'm not going to take it today.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe another day will go by. I feel pretty good. I don't think I need this medication anymore. So that can lead to a huge crisis because the brain, it's all about physiology. The brain then starts to say, what happened to what was making me feel balanced? And so then they end up in crisis sometimes because the brain does react to the withdrawal of that medication that was helpful. So that's a common experience that we try to caution our clients about, not making a decision. If they're feeling like they want to take a break from the medication or they're feeling they want to see if they can live without it, then they should be meeting with our medical director, and they should go through a weaning process, slowly tapering it down and without just cold turkey.
Mm. Well, we mentioned the family, and indeed families are tremendously affected by any member of that family with a mental health problem. What does Catholic Charities do? Because I guess I'm looking for, you mentioned a plan, you've mentioned so much designing a whole process of treatment. What do you do for family members?
We offer family therapy sessions. In any child or adolescent case, that pretty much is the best practice, to not just meet with children and try to figure out how to help them, but the family system is always part of the child's condition. So we have to accept that, and we try to educate the parents calling that this will be part of the service in their treatment care plan, that they have to understand that even though they love their children and they try to provide the best environment, that often we see that there's stressors in the family that they're not maybe putting enough emphasis on, that may be causing symptoms of children and adolescents. So we offer the family sessions to help understand all of that.
And as you were speaking, I was thinking of the before mentioned, I'm feeling well, I don't need the pills.
Yeah.
Is there a tendency in family members to so much want their child to be better that they themselves start being less attentive to whatever it is they're supposed to be doing to try to help a child?
Well, that's a part of the family sessions, is to try to dissect what other family members are doing around the child that has some symptoms, and try to see what are they doing that's helpful, what are they doing that maybe we think is not effective, and trying to come to agreements as to what everyone can do as having a piece of the pie to lower these symptoms in children.
When you talk about mental health conditions, I want to bring up the area. Are we discovering more in regard to nature or nurture in regard to that, inherited traits versus
environment? Yeah, that's environment? That is in the research every day. I've been a professor at Fairfield University for 19 years, and I train graduate students that are becoming therapists, and that often is a discussion in our classroom. It's really hard to decipher. There's no concrete science research that can say that this is genetic, this kind of disorder is genetic. We do see patterns in families, but environment is always 50%, and genetics is 50%. We don't know where it's going to go. But certainly environmental conditions, we always want to really take a close look at the environment of the family again, or the community and the school, if it's a school-age case, to see, is there anything in the environment that is also causing some symptoms? For example, bullying in school, which has been an important topic for many years now. I mean, that's an environmental issue. And so if a child is going to school and they're feeling bullied, then that can cause depression, that can cause anxiety, and the family may have a very nice, stable environment, but that other environment is adding to these emotional symptoms. So we really need to look at all the environments in terms of a child or adolescent case but it's very hard to decipher between the two. You know, what is the causal factors? But certainly you have more control, don't you, over the environmental factors, because we can look at the systems of family, community, school, and see, okay, what's happening in those sectors that may be contributing to symptoms of this child, and hopefully intervene and lower those risk factors.
I could also imagine, especially dealing with young people or elementary or secondary, that in a school setting, if classmates discover that this person is on medication or they're really, you can almost sense they're going to put them...
Sometimes that's the unfortunate case.
Yeah.
Kids can be mean. Kids can be mean to each other.
What about services to non-English speaking? Now, I'm not even talking about just Hispanic help. I mean,
well,
a lot of languages.
It's really it's really difficult in our area of behavioral health. We have had Spanish-speaking clinicians, but that's only one language. In Danbury High School, people may not know this, but I do direct work with Danbury High School. There's 44 different languages spoken.
My gosh! Wow.
So you know how do you provide clinicians? How do you hire clinicians and have the ability to speak even three languages, let alone 44 different languages? So that is a very large obstacle, I think, in any nonprofit service.
When I think of another topic, it tends to be current, is that of medical marijuana. I don't know how much of this involvement you have, but maybe expand the question to what is known about the use of marijuana in general. I kind of worry about those states that kind of legalize it and they say, oh, these people are driving around and they're, versus... I guess asking you about the legitimacy of a medical use.
Yes. I have been involved in the addiction field my whole 35 years. I have a license in addiction work, and I teach addiction courses at Fairfield University. My feeling is this. Medical marijuana, I think we have a long way to go in terms of some more solid research as the helpful effects. But certainly there's been enough research that I'm a proponent of medical marijuana. I'm not really a proponent of recreational legalization. Even though I'm a guy from the 60s, a survivor, I really don't feel that that's going to be helpful for our environment at all. The brain, the young brain, is developing till approximately 26 years old. We have found in our addiction research that the earlier onset of any mood-altering substance, the more likely that some areas of the brain are going to be underdeveloped, and that leads to emotional disorders such as depression, anxiety, bipolar. We also have seen a lot of research in the area of substance abuse-induced disorders. So we have that to worry about. And we have been seeing this for many years of people coming in with what we feel was substance-induced disorders.
I want to say what causes addictions, but I almost want to put the question differently, but I can't. What causes addictions?
I can talk about that. Many years ago, I was a consultant to some elementary schools in the area of substance abuse, and I would go into third grade class and I would do a lesson about, substances and give kids information, hopefully that influenced their good decision making. And one of the activities, Father, I would say, how many kids in this classroom want to grow up to be a teacher? Some of the kids would raise their hands. How many kids here would like to be a movie star or a singer or a doctor? How many kids in here want to be an addict? And they would go, Mr. Madwood, why are you asking us that? That's horrible. We don't want to be an addict. So the lesson was, we don't choose to become an addict. We don't choose to have a problem with a substance. A lot of our research in my direct experience with clients has taught me that there can often be a pre-existing mental health diagnosis, and the young person learns to self-medicate that diagnosis, whether it be depression, generalized anxiety, and they get relief for 4 hours. They smoke some marijuana, they have some alcohol, and they feel good for a few hours, and they get relief. And then the next day, the depression, anxiety comes back, so they go out with their friends, and they do it again, and they feel good again. So then what happens then? That becomes a dependency, and then that becomes something that takes a life of its own, which is addiction.
So what is it true to say that what tends to happen is that the life of the person who would begin by almost like problem solving, they try to medicate a bad feeling.
Yeah, they're self-medicating. They learn to self-medicate early in adolescence or late adolescence, and it does work for 4 hours.
Yeah. you know. Then you're back to the same problem.
Yeah, and then you're back to the same problem.
As far as the full-blown addictions I guess I was wondering about, does it become something where the use of it for four-hour relief becomes a lifestyle, becomes...
Of course.
Because, that's what they do.
Because that's what I was describing. It becomes a vicious cycle. Mm. And it's all about physiology. The brain then becomes accustomed to the THC that gets to the brain. Mm. The brain becomes accustomed to the alcohol that gets to the brain. And the serotonin factory gets to take a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
The workers all are go home. So they're waiting for more. So this is what causes dependency.
And that occurs in some drugs, I presume, that...
any mood-altering drug. Caffeine.
Caffeine. No, I was about to say that. I can see it in sugar. I can see
sugar.
Caffeine.
Anything that's a mood-altering substance is going to affect the physiology of the brain and cause dependency as long as you keep doing it.
What causes the sense of needing a fix, the sense of pain?
It's the physiology.
That's the physiology,
yes,
too.
Of the brain, okay. Calling for that substance.
Yeah. So does it become a
could
point?
Could be caffeine.
And it could be,
could be anything.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
Does it become a point then quickly where you stop even liking it, but you need it so that you could
be
sick?
Sure, because you won't be ill, and your body's calling for balance.
Well, that certainly sets up a real problem that I hope we could talk a little bit more about later on. But what we'd like to do now is, at the end of the show, incredibly, is simply ask quickly, how does a person contact Catholic Charities Fairfield County?
Well, we have the website, Catholic Charities of Fairfield County, so you can go on our website and,
might be the best thing,
and scroll down for any of our programs that I'd mentioned earlier. There's direct phone numbers and emails.
I can find it all there.
You can find it all on the website.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, and thank you for being our guest. We're speaking with Mr. Richard Madwid, Director of Behavioral Services, Catholic Charities, Fairfield County. To our listeners, thank you for being with us. Join us again.